Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Jerry Guidetti, and Jerry was into genetic engineering. She worked with plants. She taught at the university level, and then of course she began realizing the implications of what they're doing. Genetic engineers are interfering with the normal process of life. They're putting new genes into various living products. They take a fish gene and put it into a plant, or a human gene and put it into an animal. And they're doing all sorts of strange things, and they're creating types of seeds that won't reproduce. They're putting insecticides into various plants, which may be very, very fine as far as the plants are concerned. The plant won't respond when you spray them with Roundup and other pesticides or other herbicides. In other words, they're designed to kill weeds. But the problem is, what does that do to the substance of the plant? What does it do to the protein structure? And so Jerry eventually, of course, gave that up, and now she works on trying to produce seeds that will not, of course, terminate, that will give you the best sort of products. We'll talk a little bit later about the products she's working with, but right now let me introduce you to Jerry Guidetti. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Well, good evening, Stan. I'm doing great.
And how long have you been out of the genetic engineering as far as being a scientist?
Benchtop research, 1990. Was my last year at Benchtop Research, and then I went on teaching, and then began my own company, the Ark Institute, as a repository for all of the old varieties that I saw dangerously being altered and disappearing, no longer going to be available, and felt very strongly about folks' rights to retain both the right and practice of raising their own food, of being able to feed themselves. And this is a global issue because it is a global food supply issue. And unfortunately, I discovered that it was all linked to this grand scheme from monopolization of all of the global food supplies in the hands of a few multinational corporations. It frightens me to see the concentration. I began speaking out, and unfortunately, the straight biology turned into a bit of activism and certainly a lot of personal research on where all of these fields intersect. So have followed the genetic engineering and modification of food stories very closely, and have written a whole series of articles over the years that I call Food Supply Updates. They're on our website, and you can read them. They're all free. You can print them out and get an idea of where the food supply is going, from terminator technology that terminates the ability of a seed ever to grow again, depriving you of the right to grow your own food, to a verminator that has rat genes in it, to all kinds of things.
Well, I understand that one of the more interesting things is that the farmers over in Iraq now are being required by the military occupation to buy terminator seeds. Have you seen that?
Yeah, well, Terminator was supposed to be commercialized in the year 2003, and that was going to be with the blessing of the United States government. This technology, by the way, was created with our tax dollars. It was a joint effort by Delta and Pine Land Company and the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture. It was supposed to be worldly commercialized.
Hold that thought right there.
Sure.
Well, our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and we're talking about the Terminator seed technology. And, of course, maybe Jerry can explain what the Terminator seeds are, and then she can, of course, explain their development and where we go from here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They were developed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, using our tax dollars, of course, as a joint project with Delta and Pine Land Company, which was a cotton seed grower. And this was in 1998, they patented a technology called control of plant gene expression. Now, to the average guy on the street, that might not mean too much. It sounds pretty harmless. But from the biologist's point of view, anything that can control the expression of plant genes has the potential to be a very dangerous technology. And in fact, what it was is a technology that can generically, that means in all kinds of plants, seeding plants from soup to nuts, it has the ability to kill off the seed embryo just at the point of maturation of the seed, so that you plant a grain of corn that comes from an ear of corn before, it grows up into a corn plant, yields 2 to 3 ears or so of corn, and you have hundreds of seeds in those 2 to 3 ears. Now, normally, we would take seed out of those ears and plant them again. What Terminator does and is designed to do is it releases genetically, as the ear of corn is going to its final maturation point, it releases a toxin out of the genes that then goes into the embryo and kills it. And those toxins vary. They have all kinds of little tricks for introducing foreign toxins to the corn seeds. And with a dead embryo, of course, you are no longer able to take a seed off an ear of corn and plant it and grow your own food next year.
Well, now, Jerry, what does that, the toxins that go into those seeds, what do they do to you and I if we eat them?
Oh, well, you read the literature of all of the various Terminators that have now been developed. Last count I counted was 28 of them, most of them held by the United States, but some of them held, I don't mean the government, by various universities and so on in the United States, funded, by the way, by grants from corporations that are in the seed business and also by federal grants. At any rate, the ones that I've seen is they've proposed toxins that come from various sources, some of them from insects, some of them from, in the case of the so-called dubbed verminator, a rat fat gene is used as a toxin. They get something that is going to be toxic to the embryo and yet claim that essentially the government's position is, and I quote, essentially the same as a normal plant.
Well, hold that thought for just a moment, but I think we have to question, is it normal?
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti. And, of course, we're talking about this whole idea of a Terminator technology. And you're planting a corn plant, and, of course, the ears of corn are maturating on that corn plant. And just before they reach maturity, because of the Terminator technology, why there is a toxin released into every kernel of corn there, so that if those kernels are then ever dried out and replanted, they will not, of course, take seed. Now, they will not grow the next generation. Now, the question that I asked Jerry was, well, but what happens when we eat those kernels of corn that have the toxin in them? And some of them come from rats, and some of them come from all sorts of insects and other things. They are able to plant the toxin in each kernel of corn. And of course, the government, according to Jerry, says, well, it's essentially normal. But what do they mean by essentially? That word could have lots of meanings to lots of people.
All right. When you say that a genetically modified plant or food from that plant is essentially the same, it may be saying that 99.99999% of that plant has the same genes as a non-genetically modified or artificially modified plant. However, we have taken a sequence of genes, an artificial construct, if you will, and have placed it inside this plant. And it's not only in the embryos, it's not only in the seed, it's in every single cell of the plant. And we'll go back to the earth or whatever the rest of the plant is used for, the green leaves and so on. That is in the seed in the food, and they are saying because 99.999% is a normal tomato or a normal ear of corn, they're just saying willy-nilly, arrogantly, that it will have no effect. Now, what's the problem with that? The problem is we all eat varied diets, or most of us eat varied diets. And suppose we have an increase in a particular allergy among a whole population of kids. How do you trace back in a kid's daily diet a specific food item that those kids ate? It may be that they ate it 6 times in their life. It may be that they ate it 60 times in their life. But mixed in with all of that, they've eaten something at school, they've eaten something at dinner in a restaurant, and so on, and on and on. So how do you determine that something is essentially the same and safe? You do it by saying, do we have any impact on health? You see, what we are, Dr. Stan, is we are a gigantic cage of lab rats. All of this stuff is being put out there, and if nothing happens, fine, they figure. There is no Petri dish test to see whether or not a genetic sequence will impact our bodies. We would know, for example, if a gene created a peanut protein, for example, that it may cause problems for people allergic to peanuts. But if the gene produces something foreign to the human body, which most of them are chosen to do, largely, I guess, because of exposure, you know, if they weren't exposed to it, they're less likely to have reactions to it. Well, how do you tell when, in fact, the society has begun to develop problems with that particular protein produced by that particular gene? And in addition, the other mind-boggling thing about all of this is, in order to grow these seeds at all in one of these technologies, they have to bathe them in tetracycline, one of the most broad-spectrum, powerful antibiotics known. And then they take these tetracycline-soaked seeds and put them in the ground. That's what turns on the genes that allows the seed to grow. Otherwise, the seed wouldn't grow. Okay? So they program in this tetracycline resistance also. Mind you, we use that in laboratories a lot as a means of screening harmful DNA segments in harmful organisms, rather like E. coli, potentially harmful. We use this tetracycline dependence as a particular genetic sequence. So we're all pros at implanting tetracycline-resistant genes, for example, in organisms of all types.
Well, no, but what does that do to our ability, then, to respond to a tetracycline if we need it to cure us from a serious infection?
That's right. And the question is, will this indeed become part and parcel of our own body? No answer to that question. Will it, and I have to tell you that Nobel laureates have spoken out against this technology. The companies that are involved in trying to spread this around have been fighting the public naysayers for years, since 1998 when I wrote that first article. But at any rate, the scientists, especially agricultural scientists and food organizations around the world, from countries that have to feed themselves, have said, if you put tetracycline on a seed and you put it in the soil, the tetracycline is going to be killing all of the microbes in the soil surrounding that seed. And you know, Dr. Stan, and certainly I know, that soil is not dead dirt. Soil is a living material with billions upon billions of microbes that are absolutely essential to the normal growth and development of plants. And if we kill off all of these microbes in the soil, essentially the soil becomes dead. Essentially the natural process of decomposition and so on goes down. So add to that, that arrogant response, the fact that they're saying it will have no effect, it's essentially the same. Add to it the fact that tetracycline in the soil is deadly to planetary cycles, to natural biological cycles, and you have something that is so ill thought of. And I try to be understanding of how a handful of scientists can do something like this. I was functioning in the same arena for so many years, and I have to tell you that I try to think with my heart instead of my head and say, look, these folks are working on very intriguing, narrowly focused problems, tasks, how can we get more food? How can we get great yields? How can we get resistance to diseases and all of this stuff? So they start out and they could spend an entire lifetime working on one particular plant variety or one particular enzyme or one particular anything. And they tend to get, and you have to as a scientist, you often have to become very narrowly focused because there is so much information to be learned in one particular area in your particular field that you have no hours left, no minutes left at the end of the day to heave a sigh and say, oh, wow, I've done something that's good for the big picture. You don't know often the big picture because you are so narrowly focused, working, for families, for salaries, for the task at hand and so on, often prevents you from seeing that. So that's where my forgiveness comes in for these folks who are doing this bench work to create these technologies. Where I have a very large problem is in the people whose job it is to see the big picture.
Well,
and those folks are profit-oriented.
Well, now, one of the big problems in this is, you know, certainly for third world countries where you have, people who are just eking out an existence on their farms, and of course the tradition has been you would grow a crop, you would save some of the seed, you'd plant that the following year, and of course then you'd grow another crop and do the same thing.
Right.
With the Terminator technology, what they're really doing, you plant one crop, and then you've got to buy seed the next time around.
That's
and
right.
You have to pay whatever the company wants at the company store,
right.
or else you do not plant and you don't eat the following year.
So. That's right. And what we have tried to do, I'll go back only for a second to 1998 when the spokesperson for USDA was a Mr. Phelps. You can read that in the article. And he said that it was the goal of the United States to get this patent accepted in 78 countries, all of these countries that depend on seed, growing their own seed from year to year to feed themselves. Wow, what a game if you could achieve it, huh? Total dependence of 78 countries on you and your technology for the very food they put in their mouths. Well, it's not changed. Unfortunately, when Paul Bremer III went over as the interim manager of the Iraqi interim government, he finally came back. He left behind 100 orders, which the United States hoped would be incorporated into the new Iraqi constitution. Go on Google and look up Order 81, Iraqi Constitution, and you will come up with Order 81, which says it is their intention that the Iraqi people not be allowed to plant their own seed, the God-given seed, the family passed down seed, their own natural heritage, and that they would be given the seed, sold the seed that is genetically engineered. Of course, the yields are higher, they'll say. They're much more uniform, much more dependable, et cetera, et cetera. But what you have here now is a very narrow gene pool. Not only is the seed modified so you cannot grow it again, and I'm not going to make the statement that Terminator has already been commercialized. There are so many other ways of protecting seed other than Terminator, but Terminator is on the front burner now. There was so much international protest, including in Canada and so on, and yet it just slipped by and slipped through a biodiversity conference, and they were looking to launch it immediately, and they got hold of it up there. The folks, the organizations, Rafi, for example, now called ETC Group, got wind of it just before the conference began, and I think that was February, and they halted it again. It's not out yet. It's in experimental fields, but it's not out commercially yet. But we have so much GMO seed out there that we are already selling that is already protected. I mean, you know, Monsanto protects theirs, and tons of other companies protect theirs.
And, of course, once you have that, then, of course, through pollination, it can spread into everybody's crops.
Absolutely. Habit. And when Terminator finally gets out into the general field, we are in the deepest trouble.
And, of course, isn't it wonderful to know that we went over there and we liberated those Iraqi people so that now they can...
So we can enslave them.
They will not be forced to grow our seed. We'll
Thank
be
you.
Back in just a moment
right.
with Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're talking with Jerry Guidetti from the Arc Institute. We're talking about these ideas of genetic engineering. Now, people would say, well, they of course wouldn't go ahead and produce things that would be harmful to us, and I would say, why not? We know that they produce things. They produce some potatoes over in England, and when they fed them to rats, well, the rats died, or many of them died.
I remember.
And of course, then when the doctor who was in charge of the experiment brought out the truth about what had happened, why he was vilified, his career was destroyed, because the people who were behind this didn't want the public to know that there was the potential for damage and for death as a result of these genetically created foods. But really, you would take almost a generation or more with their use in a very, very restricted area to know whether it had a profound impact on the human being, wouldn't it? Otherwise, as you say, we're all lab rats in a gigantic cage, and of course, we are forced to use their products.
Right. Right. And as a matter of fact, I have to tell you that the non-genetically engineered, the natural heirloom and non-GMO seed is disappearing at such a rapid clip. We here at the Arc Institute grow it ourselves every single year, and we multiply it. We, at one point, in 1988, 1999, there was no way we could even grow enough to keep up with the demand for it, as folks were preparing for Y2K and a survival situation. Well, now that everyone is very complacent and no longer worrying about preparation, farmers who were hired and contracted by us to grow ever more of the seed, those farmers are dropping out of business and they're going on to the hybrids and the GMOs because they can't make a living, because people have stopped taking this very seriously. And unfortunately, these folks are disappearing so quickly, and the fields that are open to this clean seed are disappearing so quickly and all going to commercial fields that soon, Dr. Stan, these seeds are not going to be available in any kind of numbers. You'll be able to get little archives of them from folks like myself and the Arc Institute, but you're not going to be able to get them in large quantities. I've already run into some trouble this year with an old variety of corn that we have more demand for right now than we can supply. And so I am so concerned about folks, especially in view of all of the threats to our food supply and the threats to our health from not only GMOs, but from all of the other things that are going on around us right now that threaten at any time to take down the infrastructure that is modern agriculture that we are 100% dependent upon, and that they're trying to make the rest of the world 100% dependent upon. And nothing could be more foolhardy, nothing could be more arrogant, nothing could be more ignorant in my book than making everyone dependent on technologies that are in themselves not proven to be able to last for the long haul. You mentioned before pollen's getting out into the environment. It's already happening up in Canada. They've got Roundup Ready resistant canola growing wild in fields now and becoming a weed problem. Well, what happens when Terminator gets out? Their pat answer is, so the pollen gets out and it infects related weeds and infects people's crops in their backyard and so on. So what? They're going to die out and they won't become a problem. Excuse me, you just told me that it's going to kill my plant.
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Jerry Guidetti of the Arc Institute. And Jerry really has a passion to try to get people to understand that we are going to lose the God-given seeds that we've had that have been passed on from generation to generation, because we have these gigantic corporations out there that want to control the food industry. Now, I personally believe that although many of these people are motivated by profit, and what a wonderful profit if they can corner the control over seeds, they can control the food production.
Correct.
All throughout the world, and control the food, you control the people. There is, however, another agenda. And if you doubt that, you need to get our sustainable development syllabus, where we actually quote from the master plan for what's going on in the world. It's called the Global Biodiversity Assessment. It came out of the Second Earth Summit. And, of course, there the first concepts of the Earth Charter came out. It's all part of the same group of people, tied into Marie Strong, and with a very occult background. But in the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which is 1,142 pages, actually printed by Cambridge University Press, they talk about their master plan. Agenda 21 is how that plan is to be implemented, but they talk about so many things, doing away with cars, getting people out of their cars, getting them out of their homes and into sustainable communities, and controlling the water and controlling the air and controlling every aspect of human endeavor. But one of the things they talk about is food and foodstuffs. And, of course, they really want to do away with cows because they cows have hooves and they trample the flowers and the fields, and so they want to do away with cows, and they really want to get us off most of the natural meat stuffs that we would use today. But they talk about food, and they talk about doing away with the use of herbicides and pesticides and insecticides and fertilizers. And their comment was, now many people think that abundance of food is advantageous, but we feel that shortages of food are better. And you wonder what sort of people could think that shortages of food were better until you read on down and you find out that there are far too many people in the world. And the only way we can maintain our present living standards is to lower the living standards of everyone to that of the people living in Eastern Europe, which is sort of a peasant status, or, of course, markedly limit the population of the world, get it down to about 2 billion. There are people who look at the world differently than rational people. But unfortunately, many times, these people have great power and great wealth, and they do have a different agenda. Until we recognize that, you know, we can't understand what's happening. And do you really want people to feel that way? Control the food, to control the seeds, to control the ability to grow food all throughout the world?
Right.
I'm sure you've run into this sort of thing as well, yeah. Haven't you, Jerry?
Oh, of course. And, you know, there's a conundrum here. When you get too many, I use the example of the rats. I did some leukemia research when I was doing a master's degree years ago, and so I had cages and cages of these large white albino rats. And before you would possibly even think about taking a Sunday off out of the lab, you had to be certain that the cages weren't crowded, that there was plenty of water, there was plenty of food, and that you would change the litter in these cages, because it is just natural biology, and it extends to humans as well. If you litter your cage and you don't clean up after yourself, you're going to get dread diseases. If you limit food and you have too many rats in the cage for too little food, they're going to start killing each other. If you have too little water, they're going to fight for the water spigot. It's just the way life is. And unfortunately, in crowded cities, in the slums of India and other areas of the world, underdeveloped areas of the world, and right here in some of our own cities, we have this kind of behavior all the time. Too many people in too close a space, too much litter, too little water, too little food, and so on. So what does it bring a biologist to? A biologist says, "Where if there's too much overcrowding here, we have to limit this, limit that, limit the other thing." The point is, if we all live as simply as possible so others can simply live, perhaps the acute shortages wouldn't be as big a problem. If we retain the ability to grow our own food and produce for ourselves and be self-reliant, we can take care of ourselves and won't be dependent on others, and there'll be less fighting. We can divide up the resources better, Stan, than we are doing, to the point where, I mean, you know, just by mindful living, each and every one of us, and by growing our own food as much as we can, even if we do it on our patios, if we don't have gardens and so on, we can do this. And right. We can preserve our ability to feed ourselves and take care of ourselves.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry Cutetti, and we're going to be talking about, of course, the growing things, and, of course, Jerry is the one that comes up with the seeds, and the traditional seeds, not the genetically manufactured seeds. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti, and we're basically talking about this move towards genetically manufacturing and genetically altering seeds. And, of course, more and more, and not only this country, but throughout the world, they're trying to impose this. Now, my understanding, Jerry, is that a lot of the places in Europe, a lot of the European countries are very, very frightened and very, very much against this, at least the population is. What's really happening in Europe? Are they embracing this wonderful American innovation, or are they suspicious of the implications of it?
Yeah, they are fighting us tooth and nail, have been fighting us tooth and nail, and we have been sending our muscle over there in order to change their minds for them. And unfortunately, they've won some battles, but let me give you folks, in addition to the ARC Institute website, ours is ARC with a K, it's a botanical Noah's Ark, arcinstitute.com. Let me give you another place. You can read the articles on our website, but you can also read the latest watchdog organizations postings on what's going on in the world. And this group is called ETC, as in et cetera, etcgroup.org. And tap that in and go there and just look at all the latest news, look at all of the articles. They're even in multiple languages if you have folks who are listening from overseas, and they are a group that is really concerned about the concentration and the technology that's happening in the food industry and how it's going to deprive some 1.6 billion people of their ability to feed themselves. Yes, that will depopulate the earth in a heck of a hurry, Dr. Stan, and it really concerns me greatly. The other thing that we should look at, too, is the fact that the modification of seeds also so narrows the genetic diversity of our foodstuffs, because they choose what they consider the best and brightest corn that is most adaptable to the technology they're going to modify it with. And we may have a handful of maybe 5 wheat varieties that it was narrowed down to, and from those, all of the modern wheat strains are bred. And what that does, unfortunately, is it makes our entire commercial and global food supply extremely vulnerable to that one mutated virus or plant bacterium or fungus that is going to sweep through 1 year and wipe out a third, a half, three quarters of all of the wheat or all of the corn, because they have such similar genetic backbones, such similar genetic pedigrees.
Hold that thought right there,
yes.
Jerry. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti, and of course she's from the ARC Institute. She's a genetic engineer who's now spending full time trying to educate people about the very real threat of genetic engineering and pointing out, for instance, what you do is you maybe get one or two strains of wheat specifically, and that will be the thing that will be generally grown. But, of course, because of the similarity of all the wheat, if a fungus comes along that can attack that, why, it will wipe out not part of the crop, but all of it, because all of the crop is identical and there is no resistance. And what we're doing is laying ourselves open to a situation where we could have just a tremendous, tremendous famine. Now, I want Jerry to give out not only her website and how you can get in touch with her if you're interested in learning more about getting the seeds from the ARC Institute, but another website that she had talked about called ETC, like et cetera, etcgroup.org, where the information is posted there from people around the world who are frightened to death, who are really very concerned about the almost genocidal implications of what's going on today.
Right.
So will you pick up the story and let people know how to get hold of you,
sure,
and how to get hold of the other websites, because this is not simply a casual thing.
No.
This is really a matter of life and death.
Absolutely.
Of survival of a species, and that species would be us.
Right, exactly. And I'd also like to tie it in, Dr. Stan, with something else that's happening today. But let's start with to reach us at the ARC Institute, just to ask us for information or go to our website. The phone number there, if you don't have a computer, is 1-800-255-1912. 1-800-255-1912. 1912. And we provide all of the books to help you get self-reliant, and also a small collection of our non-hybrid seeds and heirlooms. The other group, which does a bang-up job, is ETC Group, etcgroup.org. And they are on the Internet, and again, they cover the global issue on the food supply with respect to concentration and technology, as these things are changing rapidly, trying to deprive all of those folks who are trying to feed themselves from doing so. And it's a they go to all the world conferences and so on. Now, the ARC Institute's website is ARK, Institute, INSTITUTE.com, all is one word. And you'll find everything you need in those two sites to give you a whole good background on this.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, I was just going to say thank you so much for getting those seeds to us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
And right now, did you have anything before we take our first caller?
Yes, I did want to point out that this week was really a very remarkable week, and I say that in a negative way, with respect to the mystery surrounding the growing bird flu or avian influenza epidemic. Today especially was an extremely disturbing day. North Korea said 2 days ago that they had bird flu there. Of course, it's a very secret society. They did not want to admit that at first. They said they had bird flu. Everyone figured it was the deadly H5N1 strain. Turns out 2 days later, they find out that it is an H7 strain that has high efficiency of transmission from human to human, but is not usually deadly. But this morning, only I think 11 hours ago, we find out that North Korea says they have 50 dead. That's what they're admitting, 50 dead humans. Question, has H5N1 been introduced to North Korea? Has H5N1 crossed with or reassorted or recombined with the H7? Has the flu, the influenza, now become pandemic? And on two websites, virology websites, they have actually made the claim that the influenza has now gone pandemic based upon the easy transmission or efficient transmission from person to person.
But what's so disturbing to me, Jerry, is yes. Our laboratories have been actually developing that. Yes. We have laboratories yes. here which have taken the H5N1 avian virus and right. growing it in human influenza, so it could be transmitted to human beings. Why would you do something that?
Yeah.
We've got up to the permafrost and dug up the bodies of the people who died of the Spanish flu back in 1918, and we're using that and experimenting with that in the laboratories.
Right.
We know that in the past, why certainly these things have been developed, we've created deadly diseases.
Right.
And now we suddenly find them in North Korea?
Right. We're suddenly finding them, and now the science community itself, Stan, is actually asking the question whether we're looking at bioterrorism, and the fact that the press is introducing stories. Believe it or not, this week a story came out, Al-Qaeda may be planning a virus bioterrorism attack. That was in one of the major wire services. I have it in my papers here somewhere. Now, why all of a sudden saying this particular group is suddenly doing it? The scientists point out, who wrote a commentary on this, that the Arab world, much of it lives in third world poverty. They would be most inclined to be killed off by one of these pandemics. And we have a case only a few weeks ago of a bioterrorist experimental virus in pigs in South Korea, appearing on the Gene Bank database in February, and it has never been out in the public. The scientist who posted it said that he got it from pigs in South Korea. They have now tested a bunch of pigs and find that this sequence for a bioterrorist virus sequence that came from the 1918 pandemic, part of this sequence, is now in pigs in South Korea. The question now is, has someone been working on introducing this sequence back in your fear just now that you just stated of why is it we're working on the 1918 influenza series here in the United States. It looks like it's already been done and possibly introduced down there in South Korea. And now we find out that North Korea has H7, which could easily transmit from human to human any of these sequences. It is a scary thing for the global food supply picture, a scary thing for the global health picture. And if ever there was a time when we should be seriously considering taking care of ourselves, being more self-reliant, certainly now is the time. And planning on being well.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. And we have to understand, Jerry, as you read the paper over this last few months, article after article after article after article after article about the threat of the avian flu virus, which really was not a threat to human beings until very, very recently. But it was almost as if they knew this was going to become a threat to human beings. And really what is so incredible is that the president now has really come out and passed a new federal legislation for quarantining and controlling. And there's new talks about mandatory vaccination. In fact, they've already come up with a vaccine for this non-existent problem.
Well, you know what that vaccine is, don't you? They have come up with a seed vaccine, H5N1, but it will not even be able to be fine-tuned until the epidemic arrives. And CDC is planning, Ms. Gebberding, Dr. Gebberding in CDC said they are planning for the pandemic for the year 2006.
And how could they possibly know when it's going to happen unless, well, let's go to Roger calling from Pennsylvania.
Sure.
And if you're out there across America, why, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, it may be just coincidence, but Steve Quayle is a friend. On his website, that lists over 50 microbiologists who've died strange and violent deaths.
Yep.
Why would anybody be killing off microbiologists?
I have my own theories on that.
Well, I will tell you, the last one was a Chinese scientist here in the United States, killed with multiple stab wounds, stuffed in the trunk of his car, which was set on fire. But you go back and you look at that the studies, and then of course we have all the government records of where they actually, even the contracts, where they were to create strains and horrible new diseases. Well, we've got Roger calling from Pennsylvania. Roger, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, thanks, folks. And I'd like to ask you, Jerry, and my question is a bit complex but quick enough, and that is, how can we have, I'm not presuming to say that the home gardener need concern himself with this, but given just as one factor the proliferation of pollen, how can we ensure that the heirloom stocks maintain preserved over time? Are there any techniques maybe for preserving them 20 to 30 years without any intervening growth cycles, etc.?
Yes.
And
Roger, let's get Jerry's response.
Okay. I'll be quick, Roger. There's we have a book called Seed Sowing and Saving, and it helps you to learn how to tape flowers closed, for example, on just the flowers that you're planning on getting your squash or pumpkin from, that you're going to take your seed from, and how to just take the pollen from one flower and put it into the female flower and so on. Very, very simple book on pollinating. The other thing you can do is you can get a product called Remay. That's a name brand product. But basically they are agricultural fabrics that you can use to cover your plants. Or you can even cover just whole flowers with these very light, airy fabrics. Water gets through them and air gets through them and so on. So you can protect them that way. You can build cages to protect them and put tents over them. You can easily do that. It takes a little bit of planning, but you can do that and you can protect them. And yes, you do want to rotate them out of your freezer, your seeds out of your freezer, and grow them out every few years so that you expose them to new fungi, new bacteria, and so on, so they keep evolving and getting resistance, natural resistance to these diseases.
And, of course, you can actually freeze the seeds, and we'll
talk
about that one of these times.
The instructions are in the box,
right.
Yes.
And let's see, anything else, Roger?
Yeah, is it possible that, say, a lower yield heirloom of, say, just 60, 80 years ago might be differentiated enough from today's stocks that they would have sort of a built-in resistance to those foreign pollens.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not to the foreign pollens. There are certain things that are more receptive than others in terms of their ability to pollinate or pollinize is the technical term for it, and reassort their genes among themselves. However, what they do have, these heirlooms, because they have this ancient history that has not been doctored yet, you carry natural resistance to many of these different fungi. I grow out, on average, in my test garden every year, no fewer than 17 to 25 varieties of tomatoes, for example. If we have a particular disease that goes through in a season, you might see one of those tomatoes or two of those tomatoes go down, but then you'll see others stay up. You might have the year, as I call them, the year of the carrot or the year of the beet, because there's a particular weather problem one year that knocks some of your stuff out and leaves some of most of it up. I strongly recommend, that's why we don't sell a packet of this and a packet of that, we strongly recommend that you always have in stock, ours or any place else you can get heirlooms, a whole variety, a cornucopia, a Noah's Ark, that's why the Ark Institute, yes. A Noah's Ark, 2x2, of lots of different varieties of the heirlooms, because life itself may very shortly depend upon that kind of diversity.
Okay, thanks so much, Roger. Let's go to Mike calling from Kentucky. Hi, Mike.
Howdy, I got a book you maybe have heard of called The Biological Time Bomb.
Oh, yeah, that's an oldie.
Yeah, and it's, I don't think people realize how long they've been monkeying around with this stuff in the academic world. Now, we don't even know what they've been doing in, you know, classified
research, classified research would turn your hair gray if it's not already.
In fact, if you haven't read the excellent book called Emerging Viruses by Dr. Horowitz, why it's a must reading.
Yes.
And it goes in, of course, they're talking about creating new diseases, but there's no question. They've been working on creating new diseases, and they've created new ones. In fact, there's a recent outbreak of Marburg in Angola and the Congo. The Marburg hasn't been around since it first came online, I think sometime in the 70s, and it was found only one place. That was in laboratory animals.
Right.
In Marburg, Germany, and some of the German towns. Why did it occur in laboratory animals? Well, obviously, it had come from a laboratory someplace, and it was the first Ebola-like epidemic that we had, and then followed by other epidemics, but each one different.
Right.
Each one is a genetically different type of Ebola. Where do they all come from?
Right.
In fact, where did the nine different types of AIDS virus come from? It's not one type, but nine different types. Anyway, anything else, Mike?
Oh, well, yes, I wanted to, segue from talking about that old book that's academic. You know, 40 years ago, they were playing around disassembling and reassembling viruses, and even I think by the time that guy wrote his book, he had to change the preference to say that the preface to the book, to say that they had successfully assembled a virus from scratch, essentially creating one.
Yes.
This is 40 years ago. So that we've seen in just the last 6 or 8 years, I think Canada had the rapeseed debacle, where they had the Monsanto resistant. What's that?
No, it was the Roundup Ready.
Resistant
canola seed. Yes, rapeseed or canola. Mm-hmm.
And the marker genes or the pollen spread to the wild crop, and
that's
so you had all this wild stuff all over Canada that cannot be eradicated.
Right.
We got real problems, Jim, and there's no question that our job is to make people understand that it's almost like the mad scientists are now in control. Did you have a question for our guest?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. It looks like there's a convergence of these various things that are going on for an attempt to make the whole world into this global corporate plantation.
Would you like to respond to that, Jerry?
In reality, I have used the word convergence before myself, Mike. I do see a convergence of all of these threatening technologies and emergence of these new diseases and viruses all at the same time that we're losing our ability to grow our food ourselves. And I think if you look at it, you have to question, is this a master plan? Because it's just too much for plain coincidence anymore, and I always try to think the good side of man, but I'll tell you, I know evil's out there, but I like to think that the scientists aren't taking part in this, but I'll tell you, there seems to be something afoot.
I know there's something afoot. Hey, look,
yes.
Fine. Thanks so much, Mike. And I think one thing, remember, if there was ever a major epidemic in this country, you wouldn't want to be going down to the store.
No.
You sure wouldn't be standing in line to get your vaccine shot. But if you have your food and you can grow some of your food locally for a few weeks or a month or two, why, well, you're not going to be like the rest of those folks. Hey, thanks so much for calling. And we're going to go to Jim from Aptos here in just a moment. And then, of course, we're going to have to let Jerry go. But Jerry will be with us from time to time here. She supports Radio Liberty, and we think her message is very important. It's vitally important you understand that there really is evil out there. Well, Dr. Stan, we got Jim calling from Aptos. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hi. Listening to this story, I'm thinking what we've got here are real serious terrorists on our hands. Taking over control of the food supply, taking over control of the water. I mean, we have a very serious problem coming up. I have a question. Does she have a book that goes along with these heritage seeds that would work for somebody like me who's basically a city boy? My wife grew up on the farm, but I did not.
Right. Seed Sowing and Saving is a very, very easy book, and that is available. So if you call that 800 number or go to our website for a description of all of those books, and gosh, we've just added a whole bunch more because we felt we really needed to step up our efforts.
Yeah,
because, to get folks even in cold areas to be able to garden, take care of themselves. There's too much happening.
Right. I need all of the basics that you would give to someone who's literally very, very infrequently been on the farm.
Right. Are you on the computer?
I've got a computer, yes.
Okay, great. Go to our website so that I don't have to take up airtime with descriptions of each of those books. You're going to find the right one for you there.
I've copied that down already.
Okay, wonderful. ArcInstitute.com, and give us a call, and we can get them right out to
you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Well, we're just about out of time, Jerry, and I think that really the fact that they're now, of course, there's an outbreak of some sort of a lethal influenza in North Korea. What a wonderful place to release something like that. And then, of course, we can always blame the wicked ruler of North Korea, or maybe we could blame Osama bin Laden.
Yes.
We certainly would never want to suggest that something like that could have come from our
own.
And
he has cried out for help today, that leader, and has asked for international support. And we have just sent test kits there, supposedly, to help them test to see how widespread this is. But if they're admitting 50, how many really are dying? It's very sad.
Well, I've been expecting something like this for some time.
Yes.
And this is why we keep warning people, make your preparations. Now, we've got about 30 seconds for you to wrap up the program.
Okay. Well, I think you've just said it very well, Dr. Stan, and that is don't take for granted anything that you have. Take care of yourselves and your families. Retain the rights and use them to take care of yourself. Take seriously the fact that, as Dr. Stan says, there is evil in this world, and I think we're starting to see more and more of it converging at this time.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so very much, Jerry. And our guest has been Jerry Guidetti of the ARC Institute. That website, again, is www.arcinstitute.com. That's ARC Institute, one word. Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you are out there in the listening audience and you'd like to help us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and if you'd like to get the tape of the month, or you'd like to maybe even just to get a copy of our newsletter, why, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. Let me suggest maybe the November newsletter last year, which is a story of water fluoridation and how it is being used to poison and destroy the minds of our children. Now, that may be a pretty strong statement. I'll just ask you to get the newsletter, to read it through, to get the documentation from it. You can go up to our website and pull down the December newsletter, which is quite good as well. It basically, it's the testimony of Dr. William Hersey from the Environmental Protection Agency, who works in the Office of Drinking Water Safety, testifying before the Senate, and his testimony, would you believe it, was totally blacked out by the controlled media in America, and nobody in America, probably not one person in 10,000, has ever read Dr. William Hersey's testimony. Well, that's the December newsletter. At www.radioliberty.com, you're going to get all sorts of fascinating newsletters. We want you to pull them down. We want you to copy them. We want you to distribute them. Of course, at the website, you can also listen to our programs, our archive programs. You can listen to our internet programs and link to our other networks that carry us, the American Freedom Network, the Genesis Network. So we hope that you'll go there. Begin getting the information to help us to get the truth out. Now, we do have a four-tape set on genetic engineering, and then we have a book, Seeds of Deception, by Jeffrey Smith, and we have another book by Greg Sciolan. It's called A GMO, Beware of the Seeds of Deception, something of that sort, or Beware of the Genetic Engineering. But two books, one is, of course, Seeds of Deception, going into genetic engineering in great detail, and then another one called GMO, Beware the Genetic Engineering or the Coming Holocaust, something of that sort. But believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the potential is there. If you've not yet read the book by Dr. Len Horowitz on emerging viruses and how they've been working for years to be able to create horrible new diseases, you really need to get the book and read it. And then, of course, we have some newsletters, and I think that they were probably May, June, July, August, either of 2004 or of 2003. But you need to get those articles and get them down and read them about all the new diseases that they've created. Where did Lyme disease come from? It's an entirely new disease. Where did Ebola come from? Where did Marburg come from? And remember, there's not simply one species of Ebola. There are a number of them. And as far as AIDS is concerned, there are at least eight different species of AIDS. Where did they all come from? Well, some people think they came from a laboratory. You'll find an entirely different type of HIV virus in the United States, and you'll find in Africa, then you'll find in Thailand. Where did they all come from? Spontaneously, all at the same time? And then, of course, if you read the writings we described earlier about the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, where they talk about the necessity to limit the population, or if you haven't yet read or seen the words of Jacques Cousteau, and you'd like to get a copy of the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, we'll send it to you free of charge, where, of course, Jacques Cousteau talks about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. You see, Adolf Hitler was really a piker compared with Jacques Cousteau and the people he represents there at UNESCO. We're dealing, of course, with very lethal forces. If you haven't seen my Population Control Agenda monograph, it's up on my webpage at radioliberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. So until Monday, well, of course, we're going to be back this next hour, but to those who are leaving us, until Monday, why, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us this evening Derek Skousen, who's Joel Skousen's son. And while Joel is taking a vacation, why Derek is going to be with us. And we're going to go over really what the writings are this month of the World Affairs Brief. And, of course, this comes out on a weekly basis. And, of course, first thing in the morning when I get up after I have my coffee, I get on the computer and I read my emails, and then I go to World Affairs Brief. And Derek and his brother have summarized very, very beautifully all the news from the Asia Times, from the India Times, from various websites that you're going to get reliable information from. You'll find some fascinating things on rents. .com. You'll find fascinating things on newswithviews.com or worldnetdaily.com, or certainly you'll even find occasionally something worthwhile on the New York Times or the Washington Post. But most of these are other sources because, of course, the media is so tightly controlled here in America. But we're indebted to Derek and to his brother for making this information capsulized as summaries of these articles, and then, of course, you can pull down the entire article if you want to, and I pull down four or five of them every day. Key articles on world finance, what's really going on behind the scenes, the very real threat of biological war, the real threat of World War III, which is rapidly coming. Well, with that as a background, Derek Skousen, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's good to be here.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm going to let you pick up the story and go from there. So tell us what the major issues are in this week's World Affairs Brief.
Well, definitely above and beyond anything else this last week in the news, the death and coming funeral of Pope John Paul II has really dominated just about everything that's going on. And we really see it in, you know, just about everything that we look at. And, you know, you'll notice that a lot of the flags are flying at half-mast and everything else. And this is really a big media event, the death of Pope John Paul II, which to a certain extent is kind of interesting that the media would make such a big deal of the Pope and a big deal of his generally very conservative and moral principles, which are, well, have historically been antithetical to the media and the principles that they've been espousing for so long.
And what you're saying is that the press and the people who control the press are totally against everything the Pope stood for and the way of his stand, a strong stand in favor of, you know, life, his strong stand against abortion, his strong stand against the use of condoms, against married priests, against immorality. And, of course, the media would just love to have married priests and abortion and condoms and the total moral breakdown of society. And what you're stating is that, isn't it a little unusual that the media, which obviously stands for everything or opposes everything the Pope stands for, would give him such great applause and great commendation at this point?
Yes, we do think it is unusual. We think it's unusual that it's gone to this extent, that they're putting so much emphasis on the Pope and his life, and are giving so much press to really a set of moral values that we know that those same media people are against. And so the first thing that, you know, we want to mention at the World Affairs Brief here is that we don't think that the media has changed their spots all of a sudden and that they're feeling very contrite about their previous beliefs. And that leads us immediately to begin to analyze why is it that the media is lauding the Pope to this extent when so many other great moral leaders in the past have been shunned so strongly by the media. And probably one of the first things that that comes to mind is the fact that they are using Pope John Paul II as a poster child for the great fall of communism, as they put it, and that refers to the apparent change or the apparent death of the communist power in Eastern Europe and Russia. Now, as regular readers of the World Affairs Brief know, we have documented over the years that communism is still actually very alive and well in Eastern Europe and in Russia, and that this fall of communism is really a media orchestration, and it's actually much bigger than the media. It's orchestrated by the New World Order and the powers that be, and the media are very much a part of that, and their key role is to trumpet this fact that communism has died, and of course Pope John Paul II is being trotted out as one of the major players and one of the major instigators of this grand deception of our day. So I think so. That is one of the first things that we think it's important to recognize here at the World Affairs Brief, is that there is an agenda going on here, and they're repeating the role, and they are in fact emphasizing the role of Pope John Paul II in the changeover there in Eastern Europe.
And of course, basically what you're saying is that they're trying to convince us that communism really did fall, that America, you know, is the only major superpower in the world, totally ignoring that China, communist China, they never refer to it as communist China, but 1.25 billion people live in communist China today. Now, I mean, this is a phenomenal number of people, and yet we never refer to China as communist China. We never refer to the fact that communism is alive and well in Russia today. The communists control the military. The communists control the KGB. Putin, the dictator, president of Russia, is a lifelong communist.
That's right. That's exactly what we're saying. And we think the media is really trumpeting that up here and hyping up the role that Pope John Paul II did, because it flows very well, and it emphasizes that message of this grand deception.
Well, let me just, for our listeners who just came back on board with us, Derek is saying that one of the purposes of what you're seeing on television and certainly reading in your papers now is the fact that the Pope was instrumental in bringing about the fall of communism, whereas anybody who really is understanding what's going on geopolitically knows that communism did not fall. They've stopped calling communist China communist China. They just call it China, but there 1.25 billion people live under communism. People live under communism in North Korea, but we never refer to it as communist North Korea. It's just become North Korea. We never refer to Vietnam as communist Vietnam. It's just Vietnam. We never refer to Cuba as communist Cuba. And so what they're doing is, by deleting the words, they're influencing our reality. But one of the great scams right now is to try to convince everybody that the Pope was responsible, to play a large part in bringing about the fall of communism and the defeat of communism. And the truth of the matter is, Russia is still under the control of the Communist Party. All of the independent states and the Russian Commonwealth are headed by members who, we are told, are former members of the Communist Party. And many of those tyrannical communists, or ex-communists, if you call it, are financed by the United States government. And we have our troops stationed in many of these communist tyrannies. Of course, we're there supposedly just to help them maintain law and order. So one of the great scams of all time is the idea that communism is dead. And, of course, communism is alive and well and continues to be financed by the United States. So pick up the story from there, Derek.
That's right. Communism is still very much alive And it's very much alive in the very countries that they're emphasizing right now with the Pope's death, countries like Poland and Czechoslovakia and those ones that were very close to the Pope John Paul II's background and influence. And for example, you know, recently they in an interview with NPR with Lech Walesa, one of the people who is well, he was the head of the Solidarity movement in Poland that that basically took over from the communists during that transition. And Lech Walesa said in this interview with NPR that he accorded to the Pope, he said, over half of the credit for the rise of Solidarity and its ability to take over from the Communist Party there at that time. And, of course, what he didn't say on NPR is that the Solidarity movement itself was basically a transition organization for the Communist Party and for the people in the Communist Party to become, well, to basically to maintain their control over the government and simply change the external name, the external focus of what it is. But the faces are still the same back there, and the Solidarity process was part of that. Now, how involved was the Pope in influencing this this non-change? Well, Lech Walesa says it's a lot, but well, it's actually useful. Maybe I can take a moment and talk a little bit about Poland itself, and it's useful to see the perspective of the Catholic Church in communist Poland and the Poland afterwards, because that's really what they are, what the media is advertising in, today with Pope John Paul II's role as Cardinal Karol Wojtyla. He, well, basically, Poland was kind of an was a little bit different from many of the communist countries in that it was not an entirely atheistic country, but in fact, the Catholic Church was a tax-supported state church there, and that the Roman Catholic organization was very much a part of the government during the whole period that Poland was communist. And so instead of being an antagonistic kind of a rebellious thing where the Pope is being characterized as kind of as a freedom fighter in Poland, it's very important to understand that, that Catholicism was integral to the communist government all throughout that period of history.
Well, don't you think, though, that the communists wanted to use the church as such? In other words, keep the people in line by allowing the church to be there, as long as it didn't, of course, oppose their rule.
Yes. In fact,
it's just like it is in communist China today. They have the three-self church, and you can be a Christian, you can go to church, of course, but, of course, you cannot belong to the home church where they really preach the gospel. You can only go to a church that is controlled by the state and where nothing is ever said that would be opposed to the state.
That's right. Although in Poland it actually went to kind of one degree further than that, not so much where it was just allowed as kind of an appeasement to the masses kind of thing, but in Poland they went one step further where they created a Roman Catholic lay organization called PAX, and the head of PAX, Bolesław Piasecki, was generally regarded as the country's unofficial dictator during most of those years, and it was appointed, and he was appointed by the Soviet KGB. And so this was a Roman Catholic lay organization created by Piasecki, and it was modeled after Franco-fascist Spain. Basically, Piasecki had you know, looked at Franco-Spain and how that totalitarian regime worked, and thought that that was a useful model to do. And so he took that Roman Catholic totalitarianism of Spain back then and put together kind of his own version where the Catholic Church was very integral to the whole process. And then, of course, that filtered down throughout all of the aspects of Polish lifestyle. In fact, there are some quotes in the brief about some Polish people who talked about how when they were growing up in communist Poland, that the lessons in the state church, in the communist government schools, were taught with the Roman Catholic catechism. They're taught by Roman Catholic priests. Regular attendance at mass was compulsory in the People's Army, and so on. So this was a very integral part. There was a very tight relationship, in fact, between the Communist Party and Poland during that era. Now, what happened is that over time, as the economics and things and basically the powers that be decided to create this grand deception of changing from an outwardly communist country to an inwardly communist country, they created the Solidarity parties and some of these other kinds of anti-communist labor unions, such as Lech Walesa's organization. And the church initially was kind of hedging its bets on these organizations, and then eventually it turned around and over time, now, as we read in the media about the Catholic Church and the Pope's relationship during this period of history has completely rewritten itself. And so now the Catholic Church gets over half of the credit, as they say, of being the revolutionary instigator in the downfall of communism in Poland.
Well, yeah, I think it's really very interesting that in Russia today, the Greek Orthodox Church, the head of the Greek Orthodox Church, the chief priest there is a member of the KGB, and nobody can get into the priesthood in Russia today, and yet, unless they have a clearance from the KGB, or whatever they call it at the present time, but from the communist intelligence, and yet, of course, they invited my good friend Dr. Wilkie over there, who's with a pro-life movement, to try to talk to the Russian people to get them to have children, because Russia is dying off. It's losing over a million people every single year. And, of course, they're going to be, by the year 2050, they'll be down to about two-thirds of the current population. And the interesting thing was, when, of course, the supposed fall of communism in Poland, before that, abortion was legal under communism, but once the Iron Curtain came down, they actually outlawed abortion in Poland, and of course they certainly no longer have the what they have in Russia today, where abortion on demand. They don't have that in Poland. In fact, they have what we used to have here in America, where, of course, abortion once in America was illegal. It's now legal in America, and it's illegal in Poland. Such a change in the situation.
That is, and that's actually good for them.
I think that certainly is a very, very positive thing. But at least the Polish people can travel, under communism. They couldn't leave or couldn't come out from behind the Iron Curtain. Now at least they can. And, of course, people from Eastern Europe can of course, come to Western Europe. So, but, of course, I'm sure you're absolutely right. Behind all this facade of the fall of communism, in key positions in all of the former Soviet satellites, are former members of the Communist Party.
Yes, that's right. And I don't want to give the impression that that people in many of these countries are not better off. People in Poland, people in Czechoslovakia, people in Russia itself actually have much greater degree of freedom and a much greater sense of ability to follow their own path.
But of course, with that, of course, comes a total depravity. 1.5% of the Russian population is HIV infected. Drugs are endemic. People are dying off, and men are dying off. I think the average a male there in Russia lives to be about 59 or 60 years old. They die much younger than they do here. It's a direct result of, sometimes freedom without responsibility or moral foundation leads to moral chaos. And that's tragically what is taking place in Russia today, now that the people are so-called free. We'll be back in just a minute with Derek Skousen. Well, Derek, why don't you pick up on the story?
Well, I think perhaps an interesting way of an interesting perspective of what we've been talking about here is that this way in which communism existed before and then went underground, and yet there's still this great big media hype that is basically covering up the underground processes of the Communist Party in there. Czechoslovakia is a very good example of this, because we have the Czechoslovakian defector Jan Sejna, who has in his possession copies of the secret Czech intelligence files, which have all the names of the previous secret communist agents that were posing as reformers. It's really an amazing list that has been showing up on the internet. And
is that General Sejna?
That's right.
All right. In fact, he was a very good friend of our friend Dr. Joe Douglas.
And so we've been we're using some of that as an example in the World Affairs Brief this week, because his list is really very very powerful and useful, because you can actually see the names that are associated with the people who were in power before, and how the power in the secret services and the KGB and all of those freedom restricting and very dangerous entities disappeared and went underground. But if you have that list, you can see what happened to them and where they went and what their involvement was.
For our listeners, General Sejna was the highest ranking Czechoslovakian military officer ever to defect to the West. He was a general. He was really very close to the centers of power, not only in Czechoslovakia, but certainly knew all of the Soviet leaders as well, and was frequently in contact with them. And he eventually did defect to the United States. And of course, the book we carry, Betrayed by Joseph Douglas, has a great deal going into the background of Joe Douglas' relationship and to General Sejna and what General Sejna told him. So, I think that this material is very, very valid. And, of course, the point that Derek is making is, why, all these people who are supposedly anti-communist now were lifelong communists. They've simply pretended to change, but nothing has really changed other than the perception of the American people.
And this material from General Sejna is really very, very useful to put hard evidence to this idea of the grand deception of the fall of communism. Because as you watch and you read the faces as they go through, you start to see, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't match up. You know, they're all still there. And we can use some of that information here as we're analyzing the role of or the dual role of the Catholic Church during this process, and talking about that perspective there. We can see, for example, that Prague's archbishop during this period of the transition was one Cardinal Franciszek Tomaszek, and he is on that list of secret agents, of secret KGB agents.
This man was a cardinal?
That's right. He's a cardinal.
And so the basically what you're saying is that
he was a cardinal all the way until 1992. So across this period here, and what I'm saying is that he's been sponsored at a very high level by the church, and yet has been on this list by General Sejna as exposed as being a communist agent.
This is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Derek Skousen. He was just talking about this list that General Sejna had put together. General Sejna was the highest-ranking Czechoslovakian military officer ever to defect to the West, and he was very, very close to a personal friend of mine, Dr. Joe Douglas. But on the list of the Soviet agents was a Roman Catholic cardinal. He was actually a KGB agent who had been infiltrated into the high position in the Catholic Church. It's difficult to believe that they would do that, but why should we be surprised? We have all sorts of subversive people who've gotten into various positions with the Protestant Church. We know that when my good friend Colonel Ray talked to David Horowitz, who came from a communist family, and asked him if the communists had been able to infiltrate the American Church, why, of course, David Horowitz said that was the easiest thing we ever did. Why we infiltrated and took over the seminaries of the Protestant churches 50 years ago. And ladies and gentlemen, that's still going on today, but it's not just the communists, it is all the other cult organizations that intertwine here. Everything is aimed at one thing, and that is the destruction of Christianity. And what better way to destroy either the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church than from within? So pick the story up from there, Derek.
So these are very, very high-ranking Catholic officials that are directly under the... during these years were directly under the purview of Pope John Paul II. And so what we see here is kind of this dichotomy as we look at acts that we see from in the World Affairs Brief and in the news and in the history that we can pick up through your shows, Dr. Stan, and others. As we put this information that we have together, we find that there's this dichotomy between the anti-communist revolutionary of Pope John Paul II and the activities of the church as being very conducive to communist rule at that time. And in fact, as we analyze the church, the Catholic Church during this Cold War era, we see that the Catholic Church was very, very standoffish to a certain extent about coming down hard on communism, to the extent that, well, we know that there are many countries where there is a great deal of communist and Marxist activities that were based on the church, in the church. And although Pope John Paul II, in his addresses, put his own views as being very much more conservative, the activities of the church were very conducive to a great deal of communist activities.
What you mean is that the Pope came down very firmly against communism, and yet, of course, many people within the church seem to be accommodating. Would that be a fair statement?
We're very not only very accommodating, but as we can see, we're talking about cardinals here who are members of communist secret police agencies. And we can also talk about a great deal of priests and bishops in Latin America who had very strong Marxist tendencies. That's in fact still a very a serious issue today in Latin America. But in fact, to a certain extent, there's a great deal of pragmatic compromise that the Catholic Church did during the Cold War. I get the impression that they weren't sure how fast communism was going to spread throughout the world, and it's very clear that they were positioning their organization, or that the organization had elements positioned in it to accommodate communism and make sure that the church still maintained its presence and its strength during that time.
Well, certainly in the past, there's been a very, very strong communist influence in Italy. And yet, of course, the Pope, the papacy always compromised with that. Of course, during the time of Benito Mussolini, why the church had to compromise with that. They always seem to have to compromise with whoever holds the positions of political power.
And so I think this is important for us to understand that the church is not always... is often much more pragmatic than they are principled in their activities. And as we see with Pope John Paul II, we have all of this media hype about what a great principled person he was, and yet he didn't always purge out the principled aspects that existed in his own church.
That was, of course, the real question, why he didn't fire the cardinals who tolerated the homosexuality here in America, but nobody really wanted to ask those questions. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest. That's Derek Skousen talking about the World Affairs Brief. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Derek Skousen. We're talking about World Affairs Brief, and when we bring our stations back on with us, why, we'll give you an opportunity to know how to get in touch with their organization. But go ahead, Derek.
So, overall, what we're discussing here is just the extent of the eulogies to Pope John Paul II and all of these things are really masking, we believe, the real compromise of principle that existed within that organization, and this is a very difficult subject for the World Affairs Brief to tackle. I mean, we went through this very recently a few months ago with the death of President Ronald Reagan. I mean, here was a basically good person who had a lot of good conservative philosophies and portrayed a lot of great concepts. And Ronald Reagan was also, as we've been talking about here with Pope John Paul II, kind of a poster child for the collapse of communism, or the so-called collapse of communism, this great disinformation campaign that we discuss in the World Affairs Brief. And it's difficult for us to come out during this time where people are grieved and are taking the moment to reflect on the positive things about Pope John Paul II's life. We feel it's necessary for us to come forward and say, wouldn't it be a little bit more sensible to hold back just a little bit on the depth of the eulogies and on the profuseness of praise at a time and reflect on the compromises that were made and the losses that also occurred during this time. And that if we are too excessive in our praise and eulogies at this time, we stand a chance, or we risk a chance of supporting the disinformation about what's going on right now.
But of course, Derek, the praise is coming from the media. Of course, the praise is coming from religious leaders across the world who really cared for the Pope. But really, this is a major media event. And of course, people are responding. People can so easily be manipulated. And there are many, many people throughout the world who really did care for the Pope. They felt that, you know, he was a spiritual leader, and they really they felt very, very strongly about him. And millions of people have converged on Rome to pay their final respects to him. So, you know, but of course, with the full help of the media, this is going to be an event that will be remembered for many years to come. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Derek Skousen. Derek, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization and certainly go to World Affairs Brief, and, of course, if they'd like to subscribe to the World Affairs Brief weekly publication?
Sure, that'd be great. So the best place to get a lot of this information is to go to the internet, to www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and there you will find our collection of news from all over the world that has to do with the issues here, and it's from that collection of news that we create our weekly news analysis that we discuss here, and you can read that analysis in depth by clicking on the subscribe button on that site, and you'll be able to get that weekly in your email. If you would like to get a printed hard copy of a sample email, you can call a toll-free number. That is toll-free 877-518-5888. That's 877-518-5888. So that's a great way to figure out if the analysis has the kind of depth that you think you need to keep up with what's going on, what's really going on behind all of the news that's out there today.
Okay, fine. And so we recommend the information there is always very provocative and a great deal of important material there. Now, what else would you like to cover?
Well, let's see. We have another story here this week that has to do with the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act is, of course, a very... a very painful part of our legislation today for us freedom-loving people. It's a very, very dangerous piece of legislation, and it has been only increasing the kind of police state control. It's really almost Orwellian, the kinds of things that are inside the Patriot Act.
And, Chris, really what it allows them to do all sorts of illegal things, come in and search your home without your knowledge, take things out of it, steal things from your home and not tell you about them, to monitor you very carefully. And, of course, the ordinary restrictions we have as far as police activity have all been simply done away with in the name of fighting terrorism, but there's not one word in the Patriot Act about Islamic terrorism. It is a massive extension of federal government control over our lives. And, of course, the whole idea of our Constitution was to limit the power of the federal government. They were never to be able to interfere in the lives of the people. Matters dealing with life, liberty, and property and police action were always to be taken care of at the state and the local level, never the federal level. But the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, of course, we have to take away the rights of peace-loving American citizens. Of course, we cannot profile Muslims getting onto a plane, because that would violate the civil rights. But we can take away the civil rights of every law-abiding citizen in this country. What's wrong with this scenario? Pick up the story there, Derek.
Well, what we have going on at this stage, and what's been happening this week, has to do with some of the statements by Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who, before he was Attorney General, was quite influential in the creation of the Patriot Act. And he's made some statements previously that there has basically boasting that no violations of civil rights under this anti-terrorism law have been established. Of course, that isn't true, and a few years ago, Brandon Mayfield, who was the Portland attorney, was arrested and falsely accused of being in conspiracy with regard to the train bombings in Spain, and the FBI and other law enforcement agencies used the Patriot Act in this specific case to do all kinds of egregious searches and confiscations of Mr. Mayfield's property. Taking photographs and DNA analysis samples and all kinds of wiretappings.
But they snuck into his house when he wasn't there, and they stole all these things and took the DNA samples, which is a violation of the law. But, of course, they could do it under the Patriot Act.
That's right. This was all without a warrant. This was all without due process of law. This was a clear breach of the kinds of basic rights that Americans expect, and it was done directly under the auspices of the Patriot Act.
Well, then why did Alberto Gonzalez make the statement that nothing like that had ever happened?
Well, that was before the press and other things started to really expose. The story hadn't quite come out yet at that stage, and only now, I mean, it's been a couple of years since this happened, only now has really the story started to emerge of the specifics behind these things. So basically, Mr. Mayfield's lawyers are talking now, and they're talking to the press, and the press is publishing this. As this starts to come out, they're having to basically backpedal on this earlier statement that no violations have occurred.
Well, apparently
he was lying before, but now he's being caught in his lie, and so they're moving around the side, they're skirting the issue, and they're backpedaling a little bit on some of the aspects of the Patriot Act. And Attorney General Gonzalez has decided to introduce some changes to the Patriot Act to kind of soften some of the most egregious warrant and search aspects of that act.
And I really think it's important that people understand the background. Apparently, with a bombing in Madrid, and it must be just about a year ago that the bombing was in Madrid, and on one of the backpacks they found a thumbprint. and it was very similar to this lawyer who was living, was it the state of Washington he was living in?
I believe it was Oregon.
Oregon. Well, anyway, it was similar to that, but it wasn't a match. But it was sort of close, and they immediately thought, oh, this man, well, he's converted to the Muslim faith. And so they targeted him. And, of course, their thumbprint really wasn't valid at all, but they certainly made that this man's life miserable. But not only that, but they violated all of these rights of his, which he has as an American citizen. Whether he converted to the Muslim faith or not is not important. But, you know, and then, of course, they would have the audacity to go before the public and say why these things have never, of course, been used to limit anybody's constitutional rights. Now, when you have people in high positions in government who lie, I mean, how can we trust anything the government says? Because what is done to government officials who lie to the public? Absolutely nothing, other than they usually get promoted and get a pension for the rest of their life.
That's right. And, you know, there's no accountability there at that stage. The only accountability that occasionally occurs is if there's some kind of scandal that threatens the political lifestyle of these vaguely democratic elected people. And so there's a little bit of, or there's enough of discussion about what really went on with Mayfield that Attorney General Gonzalez is proposing what he calls some technical modifications to the Patriot Act today. And they're trying to soften some of the specific things in the Patriot Act that were related to this particular aspect. This will allow them, actually, here in the near future, to go back and say, yeah, we made a mistake there, but we changed those few little things that you're discussing there. So when it comes to, say, for example, secretly taking DNA samples, well, we've changed that, so that's not allowed anymore, or we've influenced these things. And what I don't want people to get the impression of, or what I think is very important for folks who are part of the World Affairs Brief and other things, and your listeners, Dr. Stan, to understand, is that these concessions on the part of the U.S. government in the Patriot Act are not substantial concessions that are taking away the egregious police state and Orwellian activities that are inside the Patriot Act.
And, of course, they're using the threat of Islamic terrorism to take away our freedom. Is there really a threat to the American people of Islamic terrorism? With our borders wide open, why haven't they been able to find one Islamic terrorist to strap on explosives and carry out a terrorist attack in the United States? With our borders wide open and certainly susceptible to terrorist attacks, why has the government done everything they could to prevent the arming of airline pilots, and probably not more than 2% of them are armed today? With our borders wide open, why is it the government has not got marshals on every plane? Less than 10% of our planes have air marshals on them. With our borders wide open, why have they avoided actually profiling Muslims or getting onto our planes? In fact, if the airline were to profile more than two Muslims, why, they would come under tremendous pressure. Of course, we can profile little old ladies and attractive women, but we can't profile the Muslims getting on our planes. Are we really at war with the Muslims, with the Al-Qaeda terrorists, or are we at war with the American people? Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Roger, you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, well, hopefully not a disagreement, but I have a different interpretation. I think the press has always given a relative pass to the Catholic Church. You contrast that with the last time I recall they did any story on fundamental Protestantism was about 8 years ago on PBS when they cast those their representative group was some snake-handling hayseeds.
All right. Well, all I can say is, Roger, they have been very critical of the Catholic Church for their position on abortion. They've been very critical of the Catholic Church for their position on condoms. They've been very critical of the Catholic Church for their position on married priests. So I would say that the press has been very critical of the Catholic Church. In fact, you'll hear that recurrent theme over and over again this last week.
Well, I think they've accorded a legitimacy to the Catholic Church, which would be unthinkable to accord to any fundamental Protestantism.
Well, it just happened to have 1.25 billion members, so I would think that they would be a pretty legitimate organization. But thank you so much, and let's go to Jerry calling from Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, after, according to my research, communism was basically invented by the Vatican and was first used in Paraguay in some... a situation they call reductions or basic collectives.
Well, now, where did that research come from?
Well, basically out of Eric John Phelps' book, Vatican Assassins. And I wanted to verify that with your guest.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one of the... So I haven't read the book, and I don't have the details on that particular thing, but I do have a comment about that particular aspect. And it is that there are two different sides to the communist aspects within the communist and socialist aspects within a religious organization per se. Religious organizations are different from being large state organizations in that they are very welfare and people oriented, which is an appropriate role for a religion. So there are many socialistic aspects which are very appropriate for a religion that are extremely inappropriate for a government because of the nature of control and things that go in this. Now, the Catholic Church, of course, is actually it's historically very in between both a government and a church, and so it has a very gray area in this aspect. They kind of had to have their foot in both sides of things. So I can imagine a great deal of facts that would point to the aspects of the Roman Church, quote-unquote, inventing or being involved in socialistic and communistic types of activities that reflect those kinds of things. But I can't comment on the specific details of the colors.
Well, I can certainly comment it. I've talked to Eric Phelps. I've read his book. And, of course, he would attribute everything to the Jesuits. They're behind everything in the world. And I think this is very myopic. Yes, there are some very subversive elements within the Jesuit order. He would totally ignore the Masons. He would totally ignore the Council on Foreign Relations. He would totally ignore the Rosicrucians, the Theosophists, or the New Age movement, or the international bankers. It's all the Vatican. And I really think he does a disservice to an understanding of what's going on today by focusing on one group. Certainly the forces, the Luciferian forces which dominate the world, have infiltrated not only the Catholic Church, they've infiltrated the Protestant Church, and I think that everybody has their own specific villain. And I think that he, of course, does a disservice by seeing only one side of it. But, of course, you are welcome to believe whatever you wish. I've researched this very carefully. I've talked to him. I've read his book. And I think he's really very sadly mistaken.
Doctor, when it comes to the Masons, the Knights of Malta are the controlling arm of the Masons, and they are a Vatican force, of which there are only 1,000 Knights of Malta in this country, and Alberto Key Gonzalez is one of them.
I see.
So I wanted to compliment your guest tonight on breaking through the Vatican barrier that's been on your show for so long.
Okay.
And it's refreshing to get to the head of this octopus and see it clearly.
All right, well, thank you so much.
I separate the...
Certainly there are people who believe the Catholic Church, and I believe that the Catholic Church is not the center of this whole thing. I don't think that any one organization is the center of it. I think there are lots of wonderful Catholics and dedicated Catholics, and the Catholics kept Christendom alive for, till the time of the Protestant Reformation, and have still been a wonderful stabilizing force in many areas of the world. But, of course, the dark, sinister spiritual forces that would destroy our society are working within every religious organization, and certainly within the anti-communist movement. They're working within the conservative movement. They're working within the Christian organizations in this country. So I think it's so easy to try to point out one person, and they're responsible. And I think, of course, until you understand that there is an octopus with multiple tentacles, and it's not any one of them. What are your thoughts on that, Derek?
Well, I agree with you very much, Stan, and it's very important for me to try and emphasize that there are many good, conservative, and moral people in the Catholic Church, and that even the Pope himself has espoused many good, conservative, and moral principles, which I applaud, in which I uphold, and in which I try to practice in my own life as much as possible. But it is also critical to understand that as an organization of a billion people, we have to look at the Catholic Church as if it were a country, an even bigger country than the United States. And while I support the principles of freedom and expect the United States to follow that, I also expect the Catholic Church to follow that, and it's our job to warn people when cover-ups and evil is inserted into organizations that have the potential for so much good.
And of course, we have a wonderful four-tape set with Malachi Martin called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. He talks about many of the things you're talking about, and the dark and sinister spirits and forces that have infiltrated and are trying to destroy what was conventional Catholicism. Well, Derek, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up this evening's program.
All right. Well, let me give you in those 3 minutes, or maybe even less, some of the three key points that I think are important takeaways from what we've been analyzing this week. Our analysis shows that the media hype over the funeral of Pope John Paul II and his death is not only excessive, but it is part of the overall disinformation campaign to associate the disinformation campaign regarding the fall of communism and his association of being one of the major key players in the role of this fall of communism, which didn't really happen, is simply a way for them to re-emphasize something that they have simply made up over the years and not analyzed correctly. So I think it was useful for us to revisit some of those aspects during this show about Poland and Czechoslovakia and Russia and others, and talk about how the presentation of the powers in those countries have changed, and their outward actions, but the people and what they inwardly believe are still the same. And that will turn around very quickly as the world changes in the near future. The second point has to do with the fact that the Catholic Church is infiltrated by people who are trying to undermine some of the very principles of conservatism and freedom and good morals that many members of the Catholic Church espouse, and that there is this, just like there is infiltration in the U.S. government, there is infiltration in the Catholic Church, that church and state are both targets of globalist and New World Order activities. And finally, the third point was brought out with the Patriot Act, that even when Alberto Gonzalez and others take a small step backwards and back away from the egregious violations of freedoms in something like the Patriot Act, it should not distract us from the two steps forward that they are taking at the same time in making the U.S. an even stronger police state and taking more of our freedoms away. So,
I share with you your thoughts, and thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to having you with us again next month. I should say next week.
Thank you, Dr. Steve.
God bless you, and thanks very much. That's Derek Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program this evening with Derek and Sydney. Some very interesting points about how we're seeing a major media event. Now, I think that there are many people who really admire the Pope greatly, and it's amazing to see people from all over the world coming for the funeral. But the media is not above using this to push their basic concepts. One, of course, is that the church is going to have to change their position, oh, we hope the next pope will be very more in line with what's going on in the world. We'll have married priests and we'll have abortion and we'll have condoms and the Catholic Church will change. It's a recurrent theme you're hearing from the media. And the other thing I think is Derek's point is well taken. Oh, communism is dead. Of course, the Pope was responsible for the death of communism. Communism is not dead. This whole move towards the world dictatorship, call it internationalism, call it globalism, call it communism, from the very inception of the communist movement, it was financed from here in the United States, and the move towards world government is stronger now than ever before. Now, we have a couple of excellent four-tape sets. One of them is The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. And Malachi Martin was a confidant of Pope John Paul the 23rd, and he writes, of course, his books, The Keys of This Blood and The Windswept House, and the background of so much of what's going on. He will tell you about the cardinal, the conclave of cardinals, when Pope John Paul the second was actually nominated. It's the most incredible story. It's an interview that my friend John Leffler did, and he let us include this in our four-tape set. So I think you'll find this fascinating, fascinating material, and it's The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. And we hope many of you will want to get that. We hope, of course, if you'd want to get the material we have on the church growth movement here in the United States and how it's infiltrating the Protestant church as well and changing the music and the message of our church. We have a great video. It's called Diapracs in the Church. Actually, it's a DVD. We have it both in video and in DVD, and those will be available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We have a number of books going into this. We have Deceived on Purpose, Warren Smith's book, and then Who's Driving the Purpose-Driven Church, because there is an organized effort to change Christendom here, to very subtly to change its message, to take it away from those strict old ideas of the Protestant Church to the more progressive type of religion, just as there is exactly the same movement within the Catholic Church to take it away from those outdated views towards the more progressive movement of the hedonistic society we live in today. Let me suggest the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions. The videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, which go into what's happening to our churches today and the spiritual forces behind this movement towards the New World Order and the One World Religion. Now, the Megiddo series, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, very, very professionally done. Remember our telephone number? It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, we'll be glad to send it to you. I suggest perhaps our last November newsletter. It's the story of water fluoridation and how it's being used to poison our children. If you'd like to get a free copy of the November newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Check the documentation. If you can't find it, give us a call. We'll provide it for you. And realize that there really are people who want to poison our children. And by the use of diet, injections, and injunctions to change the character of the people of our nation. That quotation, of course, comes from Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection until Monday when we'll be back with you once again. May the Lord be with you.